Who wants to talk first?
It's the remix.
Welcome back to the Grim Reader podcast, a podcast where we disappeared for months.
And we missed our own birthday.
I can't believe, like, I'm not surprised we did, but I just can't believe, like, it just kind of came up and, like, I didn't even acknowledge it on Instagram. I was like, I don't want to like draw attention to the fact that we missed this, but
I know, yeah. But like, if when you think about it, let's do the whole year in review thing. That's kind of, you're meant to do that when it's your birthday, when it's your first podcast birthday. Like when we started the podcast, we were in like the heaviest Irish lockdown. Yeah. We were all depressed. We had nothing else to do.
The reason I forced you to start this podcast with me was because I was incredibly depressed and I needed some social interaction. And I was like, I'm going to force my best friend to do a podcast with me.
Like we were all going through it and we were there every single week. We recorded every single week, sometimes twice on a Sunday because we didn't do it every single week and we said we did. But either way, we released an episode every single week for how many weeks? Like 53?
It was a lot. I don't think it was 53 because that's a year, Nikki.
I have this thing where I think a year is 56 weeks and I don't think it is. It's like 52, isn't it?
52. Oh, okay. You learn new things about Nikki every week on this podcast.
It's a thing I have. Like, I know I'm wrong, but I just still recount that it's 56. Yeah, anyway. But we did it every single week. We were here. We were proud. We were reading all the time. And then as the world started opening up, as if you've listened before, you know me and Becca work in music. And like, how were we supposed to know what this year was going to bring?
We were not going to know. And then what happened was life got in the way and we both got promotions at our work and we've now been struggling to find time to do anything else. So woo to being an adult.
I know. Like, oh, I finally make enough money to be paying an abomination in tax. It's my first time.
That's the thing. I finally got my, you know, seeing my pay slips and I'm like, oh my God, is this how much I'm paying in tax? Like, how dare they take this much money from me?
Girl, I'm paying in tax what I used to be paying, like earning in 1 week. Yeah, like I'm paying that in tax every week now. It's awful.
Yeah. But look, at least it is, we're not complaining about our jobs because we love them. And like, I'm incredibly happy because my promotion is slightly more recent. But yeah, we've been incredibly happy. It's just a busy time adjusting. I think that's the big thing.
It is.
So, but we have been, and the thing is, we've been talking about coming back for weeks, like weeks. And eventually we finally sat down this morning. And we were like, we're going to record with the usual, like half an hour pre-chat, but you know.
Yeah, of course. It is the Grim Reader after all. So welcome back, friends, and welcome new people who accidentally stumbled across this and have no idea what it is because we haven't introduced it yet.
To be honest, if they're still listening, because like if I started a podcast and they're just chatting shite for the first like 3 minutes, I'd be like, should I be sticking with this?
So hello, usual listeners who actually know what's going on. All of the rest of you have left. So on the Grim Reader, we each pick a book. And the opposite person reviews the book by its cover. And then we actually give a book review.
Yes, we come up with our own little stories of what we think the book is about. And we should probably introduce ourselves. Because in case you forgot.
It's been a while.
I'm Nikki. I'm Becca. Well, Rebecca. Woo! I just, you know, my granny, she doesn't like our names being shortened. And whenever I say Becca, I'm like, oh, wait, no, I should probably say it's Rebecca.
And I call you Bougie Bex in the meantime.
I know. But so that's where we've been. We have been reading, me not so much as I usually do, but you know,
Becca was like downing like 6 books a week in early podcast days. Like, Becca, you needed a readjustment.
No, books are my life.
But in the meantime, outside of our narcissistic view of the world in terms of how the world's impacted our podcast, how the world has impacted book reading in general has changed. Oh,
amazing.
Book talk. What?
I'm here. I support book talk.
You know what? I'm going to give a really controversial opinion. I think I like book talk. And then when I walk into a bookshop and I see a hashtag book talk shelf, I hate book talk. I renounce book talk. There's something about seeing TikTok in the real world used as like marketing for people who clearly don't know TikTok.
I'm kind of like, look, if this is getting people into reading, I will support it. Because, yes. You know, I think what it is with reading, a lot of people are like, I just don't know what like book I'd like to read. It feels like a gateway that you can't really join. And I feel like this is kind of like, I love to, you know, someone who loves TikTok and they're like, oh, this book is being read by someone I love. It's like that whole influencer thing. They're going to maybe give it a try. So I'm like, look, it's so opening up
there's
reading.
A lot of positives. I think there's negatives as well. It's very consumerist again. But like, look, it'll take a while to find the natural balance where we like it.
Well, to be honest, I just like a little bit more variety in the types of books that are on BookTok.
Yes. It's like, the same books. Here is a book about a troubled woman. It's written in really short chapters.
I just.
BookTok.
I would also recommend Bookstagram. Bookstagram is great. Even though I've been missing from it for several months.
I've re-emerged on Bookstagram and I have lovely friends on Bookstagram. So shout out to you all. Will we jump in with a book?
Will we actually just announce that episodes are probably not going to be weekly anymore?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Before we get into it. So apologies to anyone this might devastate, i.e. no one. But with trying to record and then editing it, I won't be able to get it done, you know, in a week.
This is for fun. Us.
And you know, we want to enjoy it, and maybe it was getting to the point where we were both kind of getting stressed about the podcast.
We're
going back to an element of fun.
Yeah, the other thing is there is 40 episodes of us rambling to go and enjoy, because the episodes are always too long. So maybe this will help us try and find a ratio of an hour.
Do you know what I've been loving? I've been really listening to like a few different podcasts, or even going back and re-listening to ones that I've loved. Like I've gone back and listened to a few of the sentimental podcast ones.
Sentimental and, garbage.
Yeah. And do you know what? Two podcasts I've actually been loving recently. And it's because of you. It's The Maintenance Phase.
Yes.
Oh my god, I have
oh god
their episode on the keto diet. I was like, is that how it actually works?
It's tea. The Karl Lagerfeld episode.
The Karl Lagerfeld diet. Holy crap. His book, everything, like and then The Biggest Loser. Did you listen to the episode about The Biggest Loser?
I was
shocked. I was like, I'm not surprised, but I'm also like, oh my god. Yeah.
The episode on Angela Lansbury, however, is the nicest
episode. I haven't listened to that one.
Oh, I turned my Twitter account into an Angela Lansbury stan account. Like, I just was. I've never seen Murder, She Wrote, but I would die for her.
I've never seen Murder, She Wrote.
I know, but I love her. It's fine.
Is like the cutest little show where you're just like, wow, how is she not a suspect as a serial killer? In like, because she's always on hand for murders. The other podcast I've been loving, I'm back on my cults. I love cults again. Cult podcast. Oh, so good. So good. Any of their stuff, they're just hilarious. And
Becca's, but anyway. Becca's drinking the Kool-Aid.
Drinking. That's their thing. It's they're a song for their interest. Don't drink the Kool-Aid. And I'm like,
yeah. Becca's drinking it, girl.
You'd love it. You'd love it. Anyway.
I'm going to listen. My book.
Yes, we're going to do books. Nikki's going first, if you didn't guess.
Now, I'm coming at you with a book talk fave. That I'm really surprised, to be honest, that because we have talked about this author twice now.
Yes.
Taylor Jenkins Reid. I'm going to be showing Becca the book The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. I'm very surprised you haven't read it, because I think you introduced us all to Taylor Jenkins Reid with Daisy Jones and the Six.
Yes.
And then Chloe reviewed Malibu Rising, and she mentioned this book because there's a little bit of like a little bit of a crossover in it.
So I actually have, I mean, typical me, I asked for many books for Christmas. Actually got them all this year. My parents were like, just give her the books, give her the books. I actually asked for Malibu Rising because you had read it by then. And I was like, okay, I'm going to give Taylor Jenkins Reid another chance. Because like, she is such a popular writer and I do see why people love her. I haven't read this book because I just don't think her style is for me. And I'm being openly honest. I know I'm going to get some hate because people adore her. I just don't think her style of writing is for me. I think she's very good. They're interesting takes. It's just, for me, do you know? Yeah. She's good. I just don't love it. So that's why I haven't read this book. But this is The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. And this book I have wanted to pick up purely because of the cover. Yeah, the cover is stunning. That green dress. Okay, for anyone who doesn't know, it's a woman. You can't see her face, but you can just see her red lipstick, which is just gorgeous. Kind of turning towards the camera in this beautiful, and I mean gorgeous, green silk dress. And she's kind of standing in front of a window, but it's all like red hues, like nighttime dusk. It's gorgeous.
Really funny because like whenever I'm on TikTok, someone will be wearing a green dress and everyone in the comments will be, it's the Evelyn Hugo dress.
It reminds me of the dress from Atonement, which I also love. That same kind of a completely different style, but it's the color. I love green at the moment. I've been loving anything green. But anyway, so that is why this has always caught my eye and I've just never picked it up. I actually think my sister got given this as a gift recently, so I could just steal the book off of her. But anyway, okay. The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo by Taylor Jenkins Reid.
You gotta guess what it's about, bitch.
Okay, I'm gonna go into this. This is a Black Widow.
Okay.
I'm on my crime hunt. Okay.
She's here.
So I'm gonna say
she's
that
we're wrong,
gonna...
but she's here.
You're not supposed to shut me down this early, okay? That's
okay.
Rude. Rude. Okay, so I'm going to say that we meet Evelyn Hugo when she is, I'm going to say maybe 16, 17. And she has she's had a really hard upbringing. I'm going to say that her father was very abusive when she was younger. Her real name isn't Evelyn Hugo. Let's start with that. Her real name is not Evelyn Hugo. It's something like Annie Smith, and she hates that name. She thinks she's plain. She thinks she's not special. And she's been led to believe this by her father. Now, what we see is that suddenly there was a day that her life got immediately better when her dad left and her mother came out of her shell, that she... like life just instantly got better overnight. Okay, so this is like our prologue. Mm-hmm. Fast forward and I'm going to say it jumps from different timelines around the book and we meet her with one of her husbands. I don't know what number yet. Okay, I'm coming up with this on the spot. We meet her with one of her husbands and let's just say her life has completely changed. She's become Evelyn Hugo. I'm going to say that she moved to Hollywood. It's definitely set in America and it's definitely going to be happening in California. Mm-hmm. She moved to Hollywood and she tried to make it as an actress in the 1940s. And it wasn't working out, but she met some very influential people and she started kind of climbing the ladder of fame in that sense. She became more of a socialite. So I think we're jumping into the 1950s and we're meeting her and she's all over the tabloids or the newspapers. And like, she's just this stunning woman, very confident. People try to emulate her style the whole time. Mm-hmm. And she's married to this Hollywood actor, also gorgeous, unknown name, something Hugo. Yeah. So anyway, that's her kind of the publicized life. And then in the background, the marriage is a complete sham. Like, it's purely for publicity for him. She married him thinking like, this is going to be the love of my life. Let's say it's husband number six. Okay. And anyway, he's closeted. He's actually gay. And he married her to kind of get rid of those kind of rumors swirling about him because she's so publicized. She's, you know, Femme fatale.
If this is like the 50s, 60s, it's like illegal.
It is, yeah. Like
to be gay, not yeah. to be married. it's also illegal to be a femme fatale for that matter.
So she discovers this, I'd say, by walking in on him with someone else, and she's angry. She's incredibly angry, but you know, he kind of tells her, like, I'm sorry for tricking you into this, but like we were really good friends. So she's kind of putting up with it in that sense, but she misses all the, you know, the perks of marriage, let's say. And this dream that she had for this marriage is gone. Haywire, there we go. So we see her and she's becoming really bitter. And we start learning, like, this is husband number 6. What the hell happened to 5 previous husbands? Anyway, what happens in the book is that her husband, something Hugo, I'm going to say Eric Hugo. Oh. Eric and Evelyn, so original. Eric dies in a plane crash. He was being flown to some premiere or something in New York, and he dies en route. And you know, she goes into mourning. She, you know, she's propelled back into the spotlight, because apparently, you know, maybe people were seeing her, oh, she's just a boring married woman now, and she's propelled back into the spotlight. You know, mm-hmm. she's single again. Like, will she ever get a chance for love? And then once this happens, we go back to maybe husband number 1. We start seeing the other husbands. So husband number 1 was this creepy older man that was a Hollywood producer promising her that he'd make her famous, all this, and she married him on those kind of thoughts. But actually, no, he was just a creepy old man, and he was giving her, he was reminding her of her dad, like, beginning to get very abusive verbally, physically. And anyway, he was a drunk and he has a car crash. So husband number 1 died as well.
Oh, it's like the wow. Yas, the yassification of Henry VIII.
Divorce, beheaded, and died. But they're all dead.
Yeah, they've all died. So we're going to like work through. So we started at husband number 6.
We started at husband number 6. We work to husband number 1. And then we're going to jump back in time to husband number 6. And there's an investigation launched. And, you know,
and we keep getting this like filter.
So we see then that this detective takes over, and he's a fan of hers, but he's like, this is kind of suspicious, like 6 husbands dead. And like they've all been in accidents, you know. Like, how could she possibly be involved? And they're like, we think someone might be targeting you. And they're like, is anyone there who would hate you? And she's like, my father.
Like, oh, my dad, I guess.
Yeah. Like, purely like, I'm, you know, straining, like, my dad would hate me, you know. And she tells him about her tortured childhood, i.e. we're coming up to husband number 7. Oh. Because she's never dated, you know, she's never been with a man of the people, let's say. That's the way she's romanticizing this all in her head, that, you know, this is what she needs. She needs an ordinary man to take care of her, and law enforcement, you know, that all the appeal of that.
She's seducing the detective.
So anyway, the detective is like, yeah, like it's, you know, they wouldn't have had any of the materials that they would use to kind of look at those kind of crimes today. So it's kind of like written off that, like, she's just incredibly unlucky. Maybe someone is targeting her. Do you know, she's married very big men. But anyway, then we jump back to husband number 2. Now, husband number 2 is, I'm going to say, so she'd married a Hollywood producer. That didn't work out. So she's in that circle of like kind of famous. And I'm going to say that she meets a politician's son.
Oh my God. Are we going through every husband? Becca's going to go through writing the book.
We're going to go through every husband. Politician's son. She's like, oh my God, he's wealthy. That's what he's going to bring. He is like ridiculously, disgustingly wealthy. it's like, I'm going to say Old South money. So, you know, they're conservative.
And it's the 50s.
So. And it's the 50s. So really bad. And anyway, she's like, he's wild. This is what I need. Someone who's able to have fun. So they get married, whirlwind romance, because, I mean, she's gorgeous. And she's able to manipulate these men very easily. So they get married after like 3 weeks. The her father-in-law isn't that impressed because he's like, this embarrasses me. We're supposed to be all about like family rights and, you know, the traditional family values. And you're after marrying a woman after 3 weeks. Like, is she pregnant? And anyway, that relationship, he cheats on her all the time. Like, that is just, he is out there philandering. Like, he doesn't care. He's like, this is what you signed up for. Like, you know that I love women, all this. So she is left on her own, and we see her like drinking heavily, like embarrassing the family at public events, that she can't be, you know, towing the line. And anyway, I can't go car accident again. I'm going to say that, what kind of accent could he have?
Oh, you know what happened? They had like an argument and she pushed him down the stairs, but it was kind of accidental because she was drunk. Mm. It was a little bit accidental. She didn't think he'd die.
She thinks it's accidental, but it's murder. So, okay, he falls down the stairs, and anyway, they put it down to that he was drunk and he was trying to climb the stairs. He fell, he died. So big poor public mourning. Again, she's being kind of the fame again. We jump back to present day and we jump back to her now marrying the police detective.
And number seven.
And let's say like this is really publicized. He's a little bit uncomfortable because he doesn't like being in the limelight like this. Do you know, he's like, this is going to affect my work. But he's like, I love this woman. So, and she deserves all the happiness, blah, blah. Okay. Very short chapter. It's all about their wedding and like how she does fully believe that she loves these men when she first marries them. Jump back to husband number three. Husband number three. I'm going to say it's the Attorney General of California. All right.
He's old again.
Well, not that old. I'm going to say like in his 40s. But like she's 25 or something like that. Yeah, like she's in her early 20s. She's had two husbands. And I think that they meet at some kind of, she already knew him because of the politician family. So when they get together, it's like, was she already seeing him? Yes, she was. She was actually having an affair with this man. And we find out that he helped her cover up the second husband's murder. So there's a lot of blackmail going on in this marriage that he thinks he deserves everything from her because he helped her get out of jail, pretty much. So that was destined to fail. And what happens is that she makes it look like he committed suicide by jumping out of his office window. Now, obviously, of course, these chapters would be a little bit, you know, longer about the husband's blah, blah. But anyway, she makes it look like suicide. She pretty much forces him, like at gunpoint, to write a suicide note saying that like he couldn't deal with the pressure of being in public office, that things just weren't working out, like he loved his wife so much, and he jumps out the window. So flashback then to present day. Married. And she is now with child. This is the first time she's actually gotten pregnant. And she is delighted. But the husband, she's noticing her husband is starting to act a little bit distant with her. He's like,
because he's starting to put the clues together. He's like, she might be a murderer.
He's like, she's really manipulative. He said there's like, she starts telling him more about their past, her past, because whenever they were dating, she's like, it's just too painful to reminisce on my previous marriages. Do you know, they were cut so short. I loved them so much. And then she starts telling stories about like how bored she was being married to someone. And it just, he's like, this isn't what you've been telling me. Like,
he's getting red flags.
She starts fudging dates. So I'd say the next husband, like, they start dying quickly, like after marrying her, like the next husband like is poisoned or something like that, and it is made to look like murder, but she was out of the country, like how could she have done it? So it kind of, we kind of keep going, and like, let's say, you know, she goes up and up the scale, like it's a lot of different, I've run out of ideas, but anyway. So we kind of see husband four and five, but not that much, because let's say they were like a month long, those marriages. So again, her notoriety is like, she is really well known as like this woman who's just married many men. So anyway, in present day, we kind of see the detective going into work on this case, like on his own free time that he's working on this case. And he's like, I really think she's involved. And he starts noticing clues, like let's say some report comes back about the airplane that her most recent husband, number six, died in, that there was something had been tampered with, and then that she'd actually been to the she had been planning on taking a trip, but that had been cancelled, but she'd still gone out to the hangar to see the plane or whatever and been on her own. And he's like, oh, suspicious, but I can't put it down to her. That whatever was used for the poison was actually some of her medication for something. And he's like, okay, that was never brought up, that it was her medication, all this kind of stuff. So in the end, he pieces it all together, and she's figured it out that he has as well. So it's kind of like be killed or kill. Big standoff. And I'm going to say the book ends on like, so a shot is fired and we never know who.
Oh no, ends they up wouldn't dead. Do that.
No.
No, that's, Becca.
That is my guess. So
okay, well,
it was
long,
it was rambly, but we got there.
I was laughing in the beginning because I was like, oh no, Becca has missed the mark entirely. But you actually had a lot of similarities to the book itself. So the Heaven's Husbands, The Seven Husbands of Evan Hugo by Taylor Jenkins Reid, is obviously dictating the life of Evelyn Hugo and her seven marriages and the seven valuable life lessons that she's learned from each one of these. So the way the book's actually presented is we're introduced to one of our protagonists, Monique, who is working for a magazine, and she's kind of not doing so well within the magazine. She has a lot more ambition for her career and she's not really being seen. And okay, all of a sudden she gets specifically requested by Evelyn Hugo to cover a piece about Evelyn Hugo. So it's very strange. The editor is kind of like, I don't know why she's asked for you, but she has. And Monique is at the beginning, she's really excited. She's like, oh my God, of course she asked for me, because blah, blah, blah. And it turns out Evelyn's read some of her previous articles on, like, she wrote like this piece on assisted suicide, and Evelyn said that like it was really beautiful and poignant and kind of gave empathy and understanding to people who may opt for that. And that's kind of why she'd asked her. But it's still very strange from the get-go that she's been asked to do this. Monique's kind of a little bit off-put by Evelyn. Evelyn is like this massive, like she is the Hollywood icon. Like trying to compare her to someone nowadays is even really hard. Like, I don't know who has that stardom anymore, but like she would have been the Marilyn Monroe. She would have been like the kind of the stardom that like Elvis might have. Like, I guess Beyonce.
Rihanna.
I guess. Rihanna. Okay.
Yeah.
Evelyn Hugo is Rihanna. So the book, you're meeting Evelyn, and it's all about this newspaper article that they're interviewing her for, and they want a cover shot. And Evelyn eventually dismisses this whole thing and says, Monique, the reason I asked for you is because I want you to write my life story from beginning to end. I want to tell it and I want to release it all. I'm giving you the rights. I want you to write this whole thing for me, and it's nothing to do with the magazine, it's to do with you. And Monique is there like, what am I supposed to do?
Monique is actually her secret child. I've guessed it.
I'm just not even going to tell you, because
I've guessed it. No, I figured it out. You don't need to tell me. I figured it out.
Okay, bitch, whatever you want, tell yourself to sleep at night. But so this book, we enter into Evelyn telling the story of her life and of her seven husbands. And it's funny, you mentioned her first husband being kind of like a producer type. And that's kind of what it is. She meets him and he brings her to Hollywood. And you also mentioned that her real name isn't Evelyn Hugo, and it isn't. It's Evelyn Elena Herrera. And she's actually Cuban, but she dyes her hair blonde, and she it's in the 1950s. She can't go at that image. And she understands back then that to play the Hollywood game, she can't have it known that she's of Cuban descent. So we see her siddle through these seven husbands and everything that's happened. And the whole kind of center of the story that Evelyn wants to tell is she did have a true love throughout it all. And the question is, who was the true love? Which husband was it?
It wasn't a husband. It was her secret child, Monique.
Her again. Secret child, Monique. Oh. I will say no. So the really cool thing about this book is that it's very short chapters. You're getting little extracts of Evelyn's story, and they're divided into the seven husbands. So for example, like the first husband you meet is down in a section called Poor Ernie Diaz. The second husband begins Goddamn Don Adler. And you get a little opening to each husband, and they go through their love story, how it started, how it ended. And you also get like a little newspaper snippet. Like,
so I was kind of right about about that kind of thing. Do you know?
Yeah, exactly. Where there is a jumping narrative. So we are going chronologically 1 to 7, and we're getting moments of Monique and Evelyn in between. And it's very, I felt very, I couldn't decide what I was more interested in when I was reading the book, because there's some husbands that I'm waiting for it to get back to Monique and Evelyn to see why this is important. And then there's other husbands and it gets back to Monique and Evelyn, and I'm like, no, Evelyn, keep telling me more. So we mentioned this book in the podcast because Chloe had reviewed Malibu Rising, and I read Malibu Rising before this. So then I was super, super excited to read this because Mick Riva, the dad in Malibu Rising, is Gullible Mick Riva. He's one of the husbands, and she gets a tiny mention in Malibu Rising, but he gets a big feature here in like how she met him and what their story is like. And it's a very addictive book. It's very gossipy, as most of book talk is, and I can really see why this one is really, really acclaimed and why so many people enjoy it, because it is kind of everything we like with mainstream media. It's this unattainable like status icon meets somebody working class. You get the whole backstory, all the like secrets of Hollywood. There's a lot of really heavy themes dealt with that are all kind of dealt with quite well, I would say. Like, there's obviously sexism in the industry, and it's 1950s is when she starts here, so major sexism in the industry. We're getting like the fact that she's a Latina woman and she's having to kind of hide her race a bit because of the prevalent racism in Hollywood. We're getting moments of domestic violence and assault and the ways that they impact people, and we're getting a lot of representation in the LGBTQ plus movement. And it's a really addictive book. I read it in a day. I couldn't put it down. I'll agree with Becca that Taylor Jenkins Reid isn't my favorite style of writing. I think more especially in this book, I think it does kind of, it can be a bit like everything is just written as it happens. And I do like authors who are a bit more imaginative and a bit more loosey-goosey in their words, and a bit more, there's a bit more substance there sometimes. But what Taylor Jenkins Reid is brilliant at is the plot has so much substance that I actually don't think she could lend her writing style to be less direct. Like, I think she kind of needs it to be really, really clear, for the reader, because the plot is so intricate and clever that it just needs to be handed to you. I do prefer Malibu Rising quite a lot more than this one. So ultimately, this lands on about a 6.5, 7 out of 10. For the fact that it was really addictive, I did not want to finish it. I liked the twists. I liked everything. But it is a case that, like, the book doesn't kind of go to a really much deeper level than that of, like, kind of a gossipy kind of whirlwind story. Like, I'd love this to be like a Netflix show and I'd binge it. And then I probably wouldn't think about it.
I wouldn't be surprised if it is made into some kind of Netflix show, to be honest. Or, like, even because, I mean, they're making Daisy Jones and the Six, I think, into a movie.
Yeah.
I think because she's so popular, I could see it happening.
Yeah, this one I could see being a show. Malibu Rising, I could see being a big movie. And I love Malibu Rising so much. I loved it. I could see it being like an Oscar film. Like, the story is just so beautiful. But this one, it's not the Oscars, but it is so much fun. And it's I would get everyone to read it, because
I've read Malibu Rising. Brilliant. Like, I thought Malibu Rising was much better than Daisy Jones and the Six, which is her other book I've read. I wouldn't have said it was an Oscar potential movie.
See it, like, that love story with her mom and her dad, and her mom is gonna, like, win the best actress award, the best supporting actress. Oh my god, she's gonna be Meryl Streep, and it's gonna be so sad. No, I can totally see that movie going all the way in the right director's hands.
But it won't.
So
though.
Good.
It won't.
It probably won't. But no. this book, total Netflix waiting to happen series. It's good for, like, it's good. It's kind of young adult fiction in a way. I wouldn't be giving it to anyone below like 15, 16. There's obviously mentions of sex in it. It's Hollywood. But I think the book is, like, it's really exciting, and it's really gossipy. It's total tabloid. Like, we love it. It's reality TV. It's really, really
good. No wonder you love it.
Yeah.
Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Housewives of Beverly Hills vibes. So yeah, it's a 6.5, kind of set, almost a 7 out of 10 for me, but I did really enjoy it. So,
interesting.
But that seems to be my experience with book talk. They never go much. They're all these kind of short, snappy, fun, easy to pick up stories, but, like, which is good. But
they just wouldn't be memorable.
Yeah, I don't get excited about a new book talk kind of obsession. I think I look forward to reading it as a little bit of a break, but I never get the, I think it kind of hits all of the nails on the head to what we want in, like, hashtags, in clickbait, in everything. It hits them all on the head a bit too perfectly. And I like the books that are a little bit more obscene and strange and experimentive. It's too perfect. It's very perfectly bundled, but in a very fun way. Yes. That is my review of The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo.
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't swayed me to read it. You know,
it's very I would read it for a bit of fun, but it's not as fun as a Beth O'Leary.
Oh,
it's not as fun as a Beth O'Leary.
Yeah. love a Beth O'Leary book, but yeah, look, I just don't hate us for our opinions. Do you know, there are opinions. If you love Taylor Jenkins Reid, good for you. I love that you love her books. Do you know, for all of us, we have our own authors that we absolutely adore. You know, each to their own.
Yeah.
But her writing style is just not for me.
Yeah. One thing I do notice is that this like Taylor Jenkins Reid is massive in America, because obviously that's her target demographic. So we're programmed to prefer Beth O'Leary, and also, like, this
Marion
is very
Keys.
Gossipy. Yeah, Marion Keyes, she's our woman. There is a difference between American literature and Irish English literature, because there's a difference in lifestyle and culture as well. So I think that's actually why we disconnect from this one a little bit. It's a bit too Hollywood, too American, but it's really fun. It's really fun.
Interesting.
Becca, your book.
My book. Let me send. I actually think I need to edit it a little bit. One sec, let me mark some squiggly lines.
Hey, this is Editing Becca jumping in just to say that the following book that we're going to be talking about is Finlandia by Christina Delker. And this book does have some very upsetting and harmful topics in it. So some content warnings just for those who would like to skip this book. And please do not feel guilty or anything like that about skipping it. So content warnings, transphobia, sexual abuse, assault, physical violence, verbal abuse, physical abuse, and themes such as that. So please feel free to skip. Do what's best for you.
Now, this is one I will say, I did get this book off NetGalley. It did not sway my opinion on it at all. I have many thoughts, as Nikki knows. She doesn't know what they are, but I have many thoughts.
Okay.
And I did read this many, many moons ago. Like, we're talking several months.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, I'm a bit odd because I don't have a lot to go off with this title or with this book cover.
No, you're welcome.
I basically have no props, only vibes.
Yeah.
So, first of all, to be honest, if this book cover, so I'm looking at Femlandia by Christina Dalcher.
I would say Dalcher.
Dalcher by Christina Dalcher. It's the Sunday Times bestselling author, and the little text below it says join the sisterhood. Femlandia is written kind of across the front at an angle with these red and darker pink kind of triangles either side. It's very structured to get your eye right to the center of the cover, but I don't like the cover. It wouldn't make me pick this up. It's a bit unimaginative, and I hate that it says join the sisterhood.
There are many things I'm going to get into this.
So I'm thinking this is a real girl boss kind of movement book. It's a bit like, it's kind of, I like to call it tidy feminism, where the only issues of feminism are that we need to like have more women on screen and women in books, and that's like the simplification of it, when actually like there's a whole systemic thing. But anyway, it's giving me a bad vibe. I don't like the title, I don't like the blurb, and I think I'm a little bit skewed because I know Becca didn't like this book ultimately. So
I ranted about it after I read it. Like, I never gave you details, but I was like, I read Femlandia.
No details.
I think I mentioned it a little bit more to Chloe, because she was asking me about books recently that like I'd recommend. And I think I mentioned to her, do not read this book.
Okay. So there's the cover, uninspiring, the blurb, annoying. I'm obviously going to go into this negative because I want to be correct in Rebecca's review.
Completely swayed Nikki. We're not supposed to know anything
this
about the book.
Entirely
but...
biased. So,
sorry.
Title-wise, Femlandia, it reminds me of Nomadland, the Oscar film, where it's like, it's about nomads. And I think this is kind of the same thing. Femlandia. I'm going to guess that it's a little bit apocalyptic. It's a bit ahead of time. And it's kind of, if you've seen the newest Mad Max, there's like this movement of women who like live in their own kind of society. And I feel like this is going that direction for me, that it's this female only society. They all have guns. They're all badass bitch. And, That's kind of the purpose of the novel, is to give women kind of the action role lead of what's typically a Tom Cruise film. So we're in a post-apocalyptic wasteland. It's ruled by women. It's in the desert. They're kind of the only, like one of the only kind of succeeding tribes of people, the succeeding societies. And the problem starts kind of becoming a bit more apparent as they realize that they can sustain life just with women, and meaning that they've figured out ways of having water, of having shelter, of having food, of having everything they need, including they've figured out how to procreate without men. But the problem lies in what happens when a boy is born. Where does the boy go? So I think this story is about a woman who's she was one of the first born daughters of this new Finlandia society in post-apocalyptic world. She only knows women, and she grows up in this sector as a really contributing member of the society. She's working really, really hard. This is all she knows. And any mention of men has always been kind of a negative. And there have been instances in the past where boys have been born, and she hasn't had much empathy towards it. She's kind of almost scorned the women for bringing them in. It's kind of almost a little bit of a religious aspect of, like, if you're bringing men in, it's because you're not, like, stable in your womanhood. Damn. So she, yeah, there's like this, there's a lot going on. I'm getting very Handmaid's Tale kind of kind of echoes in this. So she's a woman's woman in this tribe. She believes it entirely. In a way, she's 100% brainwashed that this is the only way of life. This is the only way of her fate, of everything. And she's very cocky. She believes from the beginning, when she falls pregnant, that she knows she's going to give birth to a daughter, like, just as beneficial to the society as she has been. She's going to raise her as her own. She's going to be incredible. And all of a sudden, she goes into labor late one night and is about to notify the midwives and get help. And she ends up giving birth, and she realizes it's a boy. And she gets hit with this love that only a mother has for their newborn baby. And she finally realizes all of the flaws within this logic of trying to domineer sex and who's a member of society and who can or cannot be. And she's got this baby boy in her arms. She realizes, like, she's never felt love like this, and she has to do everything to protect him. So she flees, and she goes out into this new world that she has no knowledge about, with her baby boy, and she doesn't know what the future is going to bring. And I think it could be like an epic kind of apocalyptic world where she's meeting men for the first time. She's meeting societies that have men and women, whether they're completely, like, and maybe they're not completely balanced correctly. Maybe there is, like, kind of the sexism we're used to in, like, maybe back as far as, like, the suffragettes. Maybe she's for the first time meeting women who don't have all of the power, and she's kind of finding the way to a perfect kind of balanced society. But I think where the book goes wrong is it's a bit like when you see Wonder Woman and, like, all of the winning quips of, like, this is a feminist movie, are like, it's a bird, it's a plane, no, it's a woman. And it's like, wow, it's a woman. She's gone do it all herself. Sisters for the win. And it just gets very vapid and empty very quickly. And the actual movement and the actual effort that we need in feminism and the issues that we need addressed that are primary causes for feminism are completely swept under the rug to just go, oh, this movie has only women in it. Feminism is solved. And I think this is the line that this book falls into. And I think that's why Becca hated it.
Interesting. Is that your guess complete? Yeah,
that's my guess complete.
Do you know what? You were actually so on track for the first half, and then the second half, no.
Okay. I ruined it when you were
you were really close at the start when you were talking about, like, a female, like, dystopian female only society, like, what would happen if a boy is born. We were so close on all of that.
Oh my God.
You were so close. All right. So I think we all know I didn't like this book. And to be honest, it left me feeling very angry. And I even now, there's actually tears coming to my eyes with some of the really horrific scenes that are in this book. That, again, I really think there should be content warnings. So I'm putting this in at the start. There is abuse, psychological, verbal, physical. There is confinement. There is murder, sexual assault. Like, there was again, like, I think as the book got on, there's just bits where I was just left completely horrified and almost traumatized. It was really bits in it that, again, it was a book that I was like, I think I actually included in it, there needs to be warnings at the start of books. I don't care if it's giving away plot, but like, I was, this book has stuck with me because of how intensely I didn't like it and how the message of this book is very, very wrong. There's a lot in this book that I just was like, this is very damaging. So I will get into it. I feel free if you want to. I'm not really going to talk as much about the abuse or things like that. I'm going to try not to, but anyway. This is supposed to be set apparently in an alternate future. Okay. I just thought it was supposed to be into the future, but anyway, alternate future. And it's a completely dystopian world. It's based in the States, and what we find out is that there was a huge economic collapse. Think like the Great Depression back in the 20s, 30s. Mm-hmm. All right. Huge. It's completely destroyed America and hence following the rest of the world. All right. So what we learn is that it's kill or be killed society, pretty much. So I was waiting for you. I was like, Handmaid's Tale, check. Mad Max, check. Those are two things that you'd kind of bring into it. So we meet Miranda and her 16-year-old daughter, Emma. And what's happened is that we find out Miranda had a very luxurious lifestyle. She loved her husband very much, but then he actually, if I remember rightly, he dies and she's left actually in huge debt. They weren't well off, or, you know, there was a lot of stuff going on. I can't quite remember it, and I wasn't going to reread it, to be honest. So this is at the start of this thing, and we find out like people are starving, like there is no food. The price of food is extortionate. Mm-hmm. Like people are, they're looting, they're robbing, they're literally murdering people in the street to get their things. Like there's no form of government from the sounds of it. Like the government do not care. Like there's this scene where the couple next door, they're an elderly couple, they just end up committing suicide together to get out of. Oh, God. It's literally just from the start, you're like, I'm actually not okay. So Miranda realizes that they are going to die. They're going to die of starvation, or they're going to be murdered if they stay in, I can't remember what city they're in. So they are going to try and leave and try to find Femlandia. Now, Femlandia is a women's only colony, which was actually set up by Miranda's mother, Wynne. Now, the two of them do not have a good relationship because they have different ideologies. Miranda's mother, Wynne, was a huge feminist, to the point where she set up these women-only colonies around the country for women only, before there was any ever a hint of the economy collapse and the whole world going to shit, really. But her feminism is very select, which I will get into. Okay.
Is she a TERF? Even worse.
Let's just say there's transphobia.
God.
There's no sense of equality. It is just horrific. So anyway, they set out on this perilous journey. Like they're almost killed. They're almost raped. Like it is traumatic. Emma is completely, like, she's a 16-year-old. She's not going to be able to handle any of this. And eventually they find Femlandia, and they enter purely. They're not even letting women in. They have to know somebody to get into a Femlandia commune. Mm. Like they're not even opening up to women, like, please come join us, it's not safe for you. Like, again, they're like, how is that any sense of feminism if you're not even trying to protect people? So she's like, oh, I'm Wynne's daughter. They don't even believe her. So Wynne had a protege, all right, now I'm going to get into that as well, called Jen Jones, and she is actually at this camp, and she comes out and vouches for her. Now, again, there's issues there between herself and Miranda, because Miranda views this character as taking her place as Wynne's daughter. Now, there's issues because we actually learn Wynne and Jen are more than it is a romantic relationship. So again, you're there like, did she think of her as a daughter figure? Like, is this not really wrong? Anyway, so when they arrive, Emma is completely enthralled. She is completely under Jen's spell. She loves the commune. She starts alienating herself from her mother. Like, they have a lot of arguments until eventually, like, she just wants to live with Jen. And this causes huge issues. So what we notice is that, or Miranda starts noticing, is there's a lot of babies around. There's lots of little girls. Like, how did they manage to have children if there's no men allowed in the commune? So there's a whole system of how they do procreation, but there's no baby boys. And this leads her to a lot of questions, that she finds out women who gave birth, suddenly their babies died. And she's like, what happened there? So it leads her on a quest of, like, to find out what really happens in Finlandia. Now, that's kind of all the plot really of the book. I'm not going to get into much more about that. As I mentioned already, I think this book was supposed to be about turning feminism on its head and really examining it as, like, when feminism can become too extreme. As I mentioned, Wynne's mother, did I have a quote written down for her? Wynne's brand of feminism doesn't allow women to make a different choice to her. So the big thing with her and her daughter, Miranda, is that she didn't agree with her becoming someone's wife, getting married at all to a man. That's her orientation. She's attracted to men. She's allowed to get married. That she became a stay-at-home mom. All this, like, she has, and you're there like, that was someone else's life choices. You might not agree with it, you might not like it, but, like, you leave them to live their life. And, like, we see as well in the commune, like, it is her brand of feminism. It's her decisions. She's apparently dead, all right? But it's all of her choices, her teachings that are implemented. And it's incredibly damaging that you might have a differing opinion on something, but no. And they're punished. They're severely punished by it. You know, they're put in solitary confinement. Like, Jesus. You know, there's a lot of psychological torture that goes on. So it's very toxic. And to be honest, when I was reading this, I was like, why would someone release a book like this when feminism, you get enough hate for being, you know, saying
it
that.
It sounds like it was released by a man trying to bash feminism.
But it's a woman who wrote this. And, you know, it's such toxic feminism. Like, it's not anything that I would believe in at all. I believe in equal rights, do you know? Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is so damaging. There's going to be people, men who read this book and be like, yeah, that's what I thought feminism was about. And it was like, you have to be a man hater. Like, they hate men. They absolutely hate men. And it is, you're there kind of going like, Jesus Christ, as the book gets going. And I mean, even there's this, like, competition almost to be a better feminist. Do you know, when you think about it with Jen Jones and Miranda, you're there like, oh my God. And, like, Miranda as the narrator, like, it switches a few points from Miranda's present day and Wynne's past. Miranda, she's not that well-versed in things about feminism. Her mother, Wynne as her mother, really put her off it. But it's kind of like, Jesus Christ, like, it's, I know I'm not doing this book, like, any justice by what I'm talking about. It's just horrific in the sense, I was like, this is just damaging to this. As well, the transphobia.
Oh, I knew it was going to be there.
Oh, God. Obviously, no men are allowed in. And when Emma and Miranda arrive, they have to strip naked and have a gynecological exam done on them to check that they have always been female. And Miranda kind of brings it up, like, but there are women that, you know, are trans. Yeah. Like, how are they not, like, not everyone's going to be a cis woman arriving here. And yeah. I'm going to read out the quote when they get them to do the strip. I need to satisfy myself that you were always a woman. And let me get the other quote that is even worse.
Oh, God.
As in, I felt sick reading this. This is a response she gets to bringing it up that people would identify as a woman. And another character responds with, they can identify as a fucking hedgehog for all I care. I'm talking about what they are, not what they think they are or what they want to be.
Jesus fucking Christ.
It, when I read this, this is at the near the start of the book. This is around the 30% mark, you know, in the book. And you're bringing things like this up. And it's horrific. Like, it's something that isn't explored as much. But the book really focuses on, like, it's really obsessed with biological sex. And really, a lot of the ideologies, oh my God, I can't even say the word. I can't say it. But anyway.
Ideologies?
There we go. That's it. They align with a lot of transphobic rhetoric. And again, why would you release a book like this? Why would you release a book like this? Even, I don't know, you talked about the arrows at the start of the book, you know, the lines that's supposed to represent the XX chromosome for women.
Oh.
Again, I don't think you should be referencing that at all. Not every woman will have an XX chromosome, okay?
There's women being murdered for, like, being, there's trans women being murdered in the world, like, today, every single day, by people that, like, believe this fucking nonsense that, yeah, like, for some reason that their opinion weighs heavier than anyone else's feelings or experience on the earth. Like, why would you release a book that basically,
why would you release,
like,
a book?
Even if it's fictionalized, you have an awful lot of responsibility, like, as anyone with a voice. And to have a book that has a title that makes it look like it's really feminist, and then to have, like, the opposite of feminism, like, littered through the whole book. Like, is there a point where they're made out that this is a bad take, or is it?
I mean, you're led to believe that, yes, this is what happens when, I mean, I think the whole thing about this story is that, like, once people come into power, no matter what, if they were doing good, they will become corrupt and it will be, all power is abuse. But I don't think there was any reason for that transphobia to be there. If anything, no. I actually would have preferred if the book had been open to allowing all women in to this commune. It was a huge thing that I was like, I don't think I can get past. And I mean, Miranda isn't a character. She's very shallow. She's not a person that I think would be educated enough or mindful enough to bring that up, that it is a huge, huge issue. It really, really is disgusting when you're reading it. Like, there are a few other transphobic comments that are made, or, you know, Wynn's stance on things, like that they refer to it as, you know, Jen doesn't like anything with a dick. And, you know, she prefers things to be black and white, you know, i.e. that they're anything gray. She won't allow into the commune. And you're like, what do you mean black and white? Like, Jesus Christ. So that is, again, like, we're not even, like, I find it so difficult to talk about this book because there are so many things that I found so damaging. And again, someone would pick this up saying, okay, this must be like a feminist book. It's not. It is literally just, I would say, this is so damaging, so damaging. So, I mean, that's pretty much the book. I mean, we do find out that there are male babies being born. I'm assuming anybody who's listening to this podcast isn't going to be actually reading this book afterwards, that the males are obviously subjected to horrific abuse and hidden. But it's just everything in it. I read it to the end because I was like, Jesus, like, I'm going to write it, you know, a review on it. But I was like, I would not be recommending anyone to read this.
No, I don't know. Like, the concept sounds like if it was in the right hands, it could be a really good, it's kind of like she was almost trying to comment on society, but like, it's just, I don't know. Like, I don't really know. I trust you as someone, like, our alignments on like feminism, they're quite the same, and I trust you to know if this is doing it any justice. I just hate that even feminism is even in this, like that's just not feminism. This is just blatant
And I have to say, I left it until this morning to like write down what I was going to talk about. And like, I always go in and read reviews of what other people said. Now, obviously, when I was writing my review, like, I can't even remember what I wrote. Can't even remember the rating I gave it. It was obviously very low. I think it's two stars. Oh, I'm changing that to one. I'm surprised I didn't give it two. I'm changing it to one. I went into Goodreads and the rating is like 3.5 on it, which is very high. And if you actually scroll down, a lot of them are 4 stars.
Yeah, a lot of them are 5 stars.
And I zoned in on only people. I didn't read the positive ones because I was like, I actually don't think I could bring myself to read someone applauding this book. And I know that is my own bias. I should have to have kind of an even, you know, field. But I read a lot of the ones that were 1 stars, and a lot of them were from non-binary people. And how, like, one of them said that she couldn't even finish the book, or they couldn't finish the book. Apologies, they couldn't finish the book, because they were so hurt by the TERF ideologies being involved in this book, that this society that, you know, is all about loving women wouldn't accept them. And it's,
there's a review here. Take J.K. Rowling's texts that claim to support feminism, but actually undermine its core principles and string them together using random complex words taken from a thesaurus, and you get this awful book.
There was even a review by a man, and he actually at the end, I don't know, does he edit it back in? But he actually says, like, I mostly read novels by women. I don't know, was he getting messages of people like attacking him for reviewing a book that was supposed to be about feminism? But he was like, I would think of myself as a feminist. I don't think that this book aligns anyway with my own beliefs. I think it's very damaging. It's taking feminism to the extreme. It was a very good review, I have to say, reading through it. But the fact that he had to comment on it like that, he reads mostly women. You know, I was like, why would you include that? But maybe he was getting hate about it. I don't know, but I zoned in on those, and I was like, imagine reading a book where you know that you're not welcome, that you're not represented. If anything, you're vilified, you're treated as this enemy, like that you're viewed as a potential, like literally they make it out that all men will rape, you know, that men are just there for violence.
Jesus
and
Christ.
If anything, then you're going to have the people on Twitter that are going to go, not all men, blah, blah, blah. Like, sweeping statements like that, but I just couldn't.
It's basically what people who are anti-feminism believe feminism to be.
Yeah.
And what are you going to do? You're going to rile up the anti-feminists who already have a bad idea of what feminism actually is. And Jesus, my blood's boiling. I haven't even read this.
So, I mean, I'm not really going to talk about it much more. I mean, I will try to probably put in timestamps to skip this book, because I would, as you know, it's just so damaging to a lot of communities. And I just think it is really disgusting in a lot of comments that it makes. And I'm going to go in and read some of the 5-star reviews, because I am interested now that I've kind of got it off my chest of what they say. But I just couldn't give anything positive really about this book. So apologies. I'm going to go change my review. I forgot. I didn't know I gave it 2 stars. That is going to be a 1 star. It is 1 star. Apologies. I have thought about it repeatedly, you know, even seeing it in shops. I was like, I actually want to put a book in front of that so people don't pick it up. My eye is drawn to it because I'm there like, oh my god. Even finding some of the quotes today, I was like, Jesus, I remember feeling so sick reading this. So it's, I'd a book that stayed with me more, for wrong reasons.
Yeah, if it was more personally directed, like if you were one of the characters being vilified, even a man reading that book and being told that you're worth nothing, you're a violent machine and like just predator, like that's, it's just awful. It's just really, I don't know. That's just really sickening. And I guess if her intent was to write a book and show how wild that perspective is, she just didn't succeed. And it, to be honest, I think if you really, really were empathetic to how damaging that perspective was, I don't think you'd have written a book about it, that there's any, like, there's a clear way that people can misconstrue this and use it towards their own feelings. And I think if you were really empathetic to the people you're vilifying in these books, like, I don't think you would have written it.
I don't think so. So yeah. Apologies. I think I've been, I don't know, have I been as well spoken about this as I had hoped to be. I think my own emotions kind of got in the way, but I just, it was one, it just, it, like, even talking about it, I feel upset and I feel sick, and yeah, that's not what I want reading to be about. And yeah, I think this book, I really struggled to actually read it something afterwards. I wasn't okay after it.
It's really sick. And it's the fact of someone taking this book and having areas of their life that they already face enough, they get hurt enough about in the world, because there are people with really horrible points of view who will make it quite clear to them, to then for that to invade their safe space and their own time and their own reading, is, that's sickening. And that's really, I don't know, I don't know if she really thought of that implication when she, and the publishers, sorry, it's not just Christina, the publishers have probably more to answer for, because the marketing of this book is actually probably one of the main issues. It looks feminist.
Yeah, it does. It does. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know, has this book been as successful as her previous ones? Like, I remember Vox did really, really well.
Yeah, I remember that being everywhere.
And I think she had another one, Q. And apparently they have a similar kind of, like, it's all about, like, women's rights and things like that. I haven't read her previous books. And they were actually, I think Vox had been on my list to read. I've since removed it. Because I don't think, I would not be swayed to read anything else by her. And I apologies, do you know, to those of you who would like her writing style or things like that, or have enjoyed her previous books. But this book just really, whatever aim she had with it, it went very wrong. And I actually was surprised it was published. And says a lot about what they allow to be published nowadays. Do you know that? They say it's free speech, but
I don't know. It's free speech, but they have a responsibility to put content warnings on these books.
So I apologize to anyone who might feel any way triggered or upset by this book. I hope I've done my best to kind of talk through my feelings about it or comments on it. Apologies that I'm coming back with quite a controversial book, but it's one that I was like, you know what, I have to cover it at some point. I promise my next book will be somewhat positive.
I'll take the swing at a negative book next time.
Oh, yay.
I've got a controversial one lined up, folks.
Oh, damn. But I think, will we end on a positive note?
We will.
I'm just going to roast Nikki a little bit.
Okay.
For the last several months of 2021, she has put up on Twitter, this is my favorite book of 2021. It's a different book every time.
Yeah, my thoughts can change. And,
I know, but like,
I kept reading. I'm sorry that the end of 2021 brought better and better and better books.
How can you say the Thursday Murder Club 2 wasn't your favorite book?
It wasn't. My favorite book will be covered next week, so tune in.
I was so disappointed when Richard Osman was knocked off number one spot. And then knocked it off with Malibu Rising. And I was like,
yeah, I knocked it off again since. I think twice since.
Yeah.
But yeah, but I've landed on my favorite book of 2021, which will be revealed in next week's episode.
Ooh. Well, not next week's, but like 2 weeks' time for you. Probably.
Yeah.
As always, if you have any book recommendations, send them our way. We're both making our way through a very long NetGalley list.
Yes.
And all the physical copies of books that are like beside my bed are going on.
We have a lot of reading to do, folks. So do help us out and give us even more to do. Follow us on Goodreads and Storygraph and Instagram at the Grim Reader Podcast. Mm-hmm. I am on Instagram as Grim Reader Nikki, and you are Becca the Grim Reader.
Yeah.
You'll find us both. We're both tagged in the Grim Reader Podcast mm-hmm. Instagram. We just, yeah. And, we're there. And as always, Twitter.
Yeah, we are on Twitter, kind of. But with that, do chat with us, and we're happy to be back. Hopefully that we actually have a listener or two. But, with that, bye.
Bye.
Loved that.